The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. Our guest is Nauko Ellis. She is a professor in the Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering at the University of British Columbia. And she's got a number of badges and accolades and decorations. But the reason we've got Professor Ellis on today is because she happens to be an expert in bioenergy. And we want to talk to her specifically about biofuels. Reason being that biofuels, which used to be so much in the conversation about alternative energy, has kind of disappeared from the conversation. It's really been subsumed by solar and wind and even nuclear and geothermal energy, talk of new forms of hydrogen energy and so on. So we'd like to talk to the professor about really what is the state of biofuels right now, maybe get into biomass as an energy form as well, and see exactly where it's at. And also perhaps hopefully we can get into a little bit about the investment opportunities around biofuels. So with that, Professor Ellis, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. And, you know, let's go right back to what I was saying there. I had mentioned that we hear so much about solar and wind, but not so much about biofuels. And it was much more in the conversation before. Why is that the case?
Well, I think it has to do with the short history that we have. And what happened was with corn and sugarcane methanol coming on board, and something that we didn't anticipate, or it was an unintended consequence in terms of its impact on food prices, and that has sort of generated a bad rep, in a sense, for biofuels, and also with the way we think about energy, we tend to think about more sort of centralized energy sources, and biofuels tend to be diverse sources as well as distributed, physically distributed, and so there are many different forms of biofuels which may have contributed to not being sort of talked about widely.
Well, I'm glad you said there's many forms of it, because what we hear about all the time is ethanol. The corn farmers have always been big on, you know, pushing ethanol because they want to grow more corn and they want a place to sell it. But there's other types of biofuels, and I'm assuming that there's certain crops out there that are not for human consumption. We don't eat them, but they actually make good biofuels. So can you talk a little bit about the different types of biofuels there are, and talk about some of the crops, because my understanding is there are crops out there that are excellent sources for biofuel that we don't eat.
Absolutely. So yes, historically we've been looking at what's called the first generation biofuels, which are the parts that we tend to consume. It could be vegetable oils or seeds. We've been looking at diversifying that, the source, and looking at what's called cellulosic ethanol, which is basically making ethanol as if you were making from corn, using grass or wood. So different types of sort of parts of the biomass that we don't consume per se. Or green diesel, which is derived from algae and other plant sources. So there are many other sources that we could look at to convert to biofuels.
So let's take algae as an example, because I know that there is a company in the Bay Area. It's a startup company, I think a venture-backed company. I forget the name, but I've met the CEO before. And so algae can be grown, yeah, in the ocean. There's plenty of room for that kind of growth. It's not consumed by humans, generally speaking. And I believe that this company had a contract with the United States military where they were producing biofuels. I think it was more on a pilot or experimental basis. And the fuel is powerful enough that it was being used, I believe, in aircraft carriers and jet fighters. Have you heard of such a thing? Is there, maybe I got some misinformation, but my understanding is the military has even been experimenting with biofuels in part because of the fact that the military has been called out to protect oil over and over again. And if we can make the conversion away from fossil fuels to biofuels, as well as wind and solar, that suddenly we kind of are able to avoid some of these military conflicts. I know that was a long-winded way of asking you a simpler question, which has to do with the use of being able to grow algae in the ocean and whether the military, let's start with the whole military angle. Have you heard of the military using biofuels?
Yes, I have. And I think there's a great appetite for what's called a drop-in fuel, which is with minimal adjustment to the current engines that you're able to supply these type of fuels. Military as well as large chemical companies, petroleum industries are looking into diversifying their sources from an energy security point of view, as well as lowering the carbon footprint. One of the things that we need to think about, though, is the energetics for the biofuels, and that we have to look at energy return on energy invested, that type of thing, meaning that how much energy was consumed to produce this amount of energy that will be combusted in engine. And I think biofuels is doesn't look all that good when it comes to energetics. And so there's a lot of room for research to happen in order to combat that.
Well, and that's one of the questions I wanted to ask you about was technological breakthroughs. I mean, the current state of biofuels in terms of usage and development, obviously is not being as widely used as I think a lot of people thought it would be at this stage. Maybe largely because of the point you just made about, you know, hey, look at the energy investment for the energy return. But are there any indications that you say that technological breakthroughs are in the offing that could change that whole equation?
I don't know if it's going to change the whole equation, but I think what we need to start thinking about is how do we transition to a low carbon and resilient economy? And that would, in my view, the bioenergy or biofuels that should be in the mix in terms of transitioning to something different. And in terms of breakthroughs or in terms of what's happening on the ground, there are a number of companies that are looking at variety of feedstocks and looking into producing fuel as well as hydrogen as well. So a couple of examples would be looking at municipal solid waste and converting that into energy, as well as woody biomass and whatnot.
Now, would that be a biofuel or would that be a biomass? Is it, what's the dividing line between biofuel and biomass energy?
I think that's where it gets blurry and people get a little bit confused, in a sense that I think when people hear biofuels, they immediately associate with ethanol and thinking, oh no, that's, you know, corn ethanol has done certain things to the market. But definition wise, it is all biomass. And so if we were to produce fuel from biomass, we will call it biofuels, and I tend to use it in a pretty general sense.
Now, what about the, I forget the term you use, but you talked about the amount of energy it takes to produce the energy you're going to get out of biofuels. What is the ratio there? I mean, are we using, I don't know if you'd use a ratio or percentage, but where does it currently stand?
So, for example, if we do energy return on energy invested, let's say Wynn could be about 18 compared to biodiesel or corn ethanol being pretty low, and could be around 1.2, 1.3-ish. So that's pretty low in terms of the energy, you know, having one unit of energy spent and energy being returned.
So one unit of energy spent gets you how much energy returned?
So it's there's just a huge range of numbers out there. It could be as low as 0.8, which means that you get less energy back, or 1.3 or so, which is just a little bit more than what you've put in, compared to some of the other energy sources, like hydropower and wind. That is a pretty small number.
Wow. That doesn't look very promising. It doesn't sound very promising for investors or for the whole energy matrix and the movement towards renewable energy. What's the positive?
What we need to think about is kind of looking at it from a holistic view. And I think we tend to think energy in a centralized, big power stations and whatnot in the past. But there are sources of biomass or sources of energy that are distributed. And it doesn't make sense, per se, to truck it over to have a centralized location. But there are many ways in which we can utilize that energy source. And so kind of looking at it in a systems view, there's certainly a number of sources, biomass sources, that would make sense to convert it to for utilization as fuel, and that's what we should probably start looking at in terms of resilient ways of supplying energy. We need to tap into many different ways in order for us to become resilient, and I think biomass does still have a lot in that realm.
So you had mentioned sewage or human waste. I suppose you could throw animal waste in there. We generate tremendous amounts of waste. Is there a way to convert that? Obviously, there is a way to convert that to energy, because you've already alluded to that. But is the return on invested energy any better there? And are there maybe some technological breakthroughs? Are we on the cusp of any technological breakthroughs that could turn this into something much better than it is today?
There are, and there are a number of small companies that are working on what's called gasification. It's a technology that has been around, but the source of feedstock has not been explored until recently. So as I mentioned before, municipal solid waste, animal waste, or biomass waste, we're able to convert that to syngas, which is hydrogen and carbon monoxide, which is the sort of the chemical compounds that could build into different fuels. And we're seeing that that type of startup companies popping up in many areas.
If you were to look down the road, Professor, say 5, 10 years, maybe even 20 years, now there's other forms of energy right now that are just zooming along. Solar and wind have really, the cost has just plummeted, and which has been huge. And it's now become an inexpensive form of energy, relatively speaking. But that's not to say that we're not going to need biofuels in the future to do some heavy lifting, like run very heavy equipment or power an aircraft carrier or what have you. So, if you were to look 10, 20 years down the road, what do you expect to see in the way of biofuels or biomass energy? And I understand I'm asking you to make a prediction here, and you can't possibly know all the potential breakthroughs, but are you optimistic? Maybe it's better to frame it this way. Are you optimistic about the future of biofuels and bioenergy, or do you feel that there's not a lot of upside to this, not a huge amount of upside to this just because of the limitations on the amount of energy that needs to be input?
I would think that it is a key. Biofuels can play a key role in transitioning to something in the future. So in the next 20 years, it still will be a viable way to produce energy. And I think I would think about it more from a systems point of view and think that in certain areas, regions, that would make sense to utilize the sources. For example, rural communities may have potential problem with accessing conventional fuels. It may be that we start looking at diversifying the way that we produce energy for those communities. It really sort of has to look at ways in which we can integrate and decentralize energy production. And also with the potential, biomass does have the potential for carbon negative energy, which is if you were to produce or consume biofuels and at the same time captures the carbon dioxide, that constitutes for a carbon negative energy source. And for that as well, there is a place for biofuels to play.
Where is the leading research being done? Are there a few universities around the world that are particularly advanced in the study of biofuels and bioenergy? Maybe your own university, I don't know.
I think there are just so many different aspects, and this is what makes biomass utilization a little bit tricky in sort of naming who's who in this industry, because of course there's a lot of universities and research institutions in Europe that are quite advanced in the field, a bunch in North America as well as Asia, but biomass being quite diverse, there are different aspects, such as those who are studying the supply chain of biomass to technology to looking at efficiencies, gaining efficiencies. So there are a number of different areas, and I probably can't comment on who's who at this point.
I want to go back to a term you used. I think you said drop-in energy. We were talking about the military at the time, but then you were also talking about remote areas that aren't necessarily part of the energy grid or the energy distribution system. What do you mean by drop-in energy, and would it cover these remote areas? Is that part of what you're talking about, being able to deliver biofuels, or maybe even create a small processing plants in those areas that allow for them to generate that kind of energy for themselves?
Yes, so drop-in fuels would mean that there are chemical compounds that are quite similar to the types of chemicals that are currently used in engines, diesel generators and whatnot. And so as you mentioned, yes, there's a potential for rural communities perhaps to shift from fossil fuel-based to more renewable energy sources by looking at drop-in fuels. And this would mean that the infrastructure, we're able to utilize the infrastructure that we have currently, and it will definitely be looked at as a transitional state. So if you were to do another types of renewable energy, you would have to invest quite a bit up front to build that infrastructure. And sort of the time frame for these things may be such that looking at drop-in fuels for the next 10, 20 years and then sort of gradually building up the other types of infrastructure, whether it be wind, solar, or hydrogen-based infrastructure, may be something that is where biomass can support.
Now, you had mentioned human and animal waste, so let me ask you about something else that we have a just a proliferation of, and that is just garbage. We have landfills, and we are such a throwaway society. Every society that becomes wealthy seems to become a throwaway society. And there have been, and I don't know if this moves outside of your area of expertise, but you might have something to say about the whole idea of incinerators that generate energy from garbage. Now, there is the whole question of pollution, and I don't know how good the filters are on this stuff, that the output, not the energy output, but the actual waste output is such that it doesn't add to the pollution problem. Are waste incinerators something that you spend any time looking at? And is there anything really promising going on there?
Well, waste incinerators are something that I don't know too much in terms of the current technology, but what I hear is that the technology to abate the pollution has advanced quite significantly, in that some of those incinerators can operate quite cleanly. Now, once again, how I would look at this is to sort of look at it from the systems point of view, and yes, indeed, waste could be a source for energy, but when you think about the supply chain, if we are to keep on doing that, we can't possibly have enough material supply to keep on generating the waste to generate energy. I don't know if I'm making myself clear, but if we
we would run out of garbage.
Yes, absolutely, exactly.
Well, that's actually kind of promising, isn't it? Because then we landfills. I mean, it would be supplemental. It wouldn't supply all our energy needs. It would just be supplemental.
Right. And but what we have to sort of start thinking about, and this is a big shift in our thinking, is what people would call it a circular economy. And currently, what we do, and especially with plastic waste and whatnot, we have, you know, a huge problem with single-use plastic and it them being in the waste supply chain. But can we start to design things differently so that we don't generate as much waste? You know, we need to have that circularity in material and energy to make sure that it can be sustainable. And so I would say that in the current state, yes, waste incineration is something that we would have, I think it would have to be in the mix to generate energy, but to kind of establish that as a sustainable way of making energy is probably not the right way to think about.
If you were to, in retrospect, think back on this, Professor Ellis, would you have said, gee, I really should have gone into solar or hydrogen or wind because bioenergy is not going to do the heavy lifting that we once thought it would be doing? Would you have made a different career choice, or is your research taking you into a lot of other areas that we're not even discussing?
Right. Oh, that's a good question. I keep on working on this area because there's a lot to still work on. And one of the newer ways in which we are looking at is starting with hydrocarbons or biomass and gasifying it. And from syngas, we could produce fuel and also have a supply of hydrogen. And so from biomass, we are able to utilize in many different ways. And perhaps this could be a way for getting into the hydrogen economy in the future. We are currently on campus looking at gasifying biomass and then sort of building it to renewable methane. And so there are still a lot of things need to be looked at, which keeps me going in this field.
Interesting. Well, the story has not come to an end by any stretch of the imagination. So it sounds to me, Professor Ellis, like you made the right choice, and we are pulling for you to add to the our energy matrix here, because we definitely need it. It's been inspiring to see the gains that have been made in wind and solar, and if we can do the same with things such as, I notice on your resume here, on your bio, it talks about carbon capture and conversion. That's one of the areas of expertise, multi-phase reaction engineering with an emphasis on biomass utilization. We won't even ask you for definitions on that. Way above our heads on that one. But to our listeners, our guest has been Nauko Ellis. She's professor, really a bioenergy expert, as I said at the top of the program, and professor at the Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering at the University of British Columbia. Professor Ellis, I learned a lot. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Well, thank you, and for your interest in this topic.